Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 27 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this journey to raise your productivity to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions, episode 552.
Today, Ed asks,
in episode 536, you mentioned the possibility of contractions in the ebook marketplace due to cultural and economic trends in the world these days. What trends are you referring to?
I was kind of afraid I'd get this question.
Okay, so you probably have noticed that the world seems to be sort of flying apart, and at a really odd time because, by all the numbers, things are better than they've ever been. Crime rates lower, or at least a couple of years ago, it was the lowest it had been since World War II. The affluence rate of the middle class person and even the lower class person is higher than it's ever been in history, despite the fact that the wealth gap between rich and poor is also the greatest it's ever been in history. And the level of absolute poverty in the world is the lowest in human history, and it keeps going down. This seems like the recipe for a good, happy, and bright world, and yet at the same time, we seem to have populists coming into government all over the world, we seem to have war drums brewing in the Far East, all sorts of crazy stuff happening in Europe, and everybody's got an opinion, and everybody's got a political position, many of which are diametrically opposed to each other in very ugly ways. And everybody's running for home in terms of whoever their home team is, politically and culturally. And it all seems to be happening at the same time. And the question is, what's going on? Because if you know what's going on, then you can have a pretty good idea of the sort of course you're going to have to navigate over the next few years. So this is a bit of demography and geopolitics 101. This is not partisan. This is just historical. And I will put references for some of my sources in the show notes here. At the end of World War II, nobody in the world had a navy aside from the United States. And this is a problem because international trade happens with navies. And without the flow of goods and services between the continents and the countries, the ability for most countries to grow economically seriously gets curtailed. It's very hard, for example, to run an electronics firm in England if you don't have access to metals from the U.S. and the Far East, because you can't fabricate electronics affordably if you're just sourcing locally from the British Isles. A lot of things are like that. Like the iPhone has 16,000 steps in its supply chain. Literally, from ground to your hand, 16,000 different ports of call touch that phone, whether it's the source of the minerals or the source of the oil that creates the energy or the plastics that go into it, to the source of the sand that goes into the chips and the fiberglass, to the source of the plants that supply the volatile esters for the fiberglass resin, all the way down through the manufacturing chain, which generally happens in East Asia. 16,000 different hands that the parts of that iPhone pass through before it hits yours. This is possible because after World War II, when no one had a navy, the U.S. said, this is bullshit, we don't want this to happen anymore. So they basically took all the allies and they locked them in a room in New Hampshire, and they said, okay, here's the deal. You help us fight the Soviets, we will build our navy so that we can guarantee the security of the global supply chain. And that was the deal. We basically gave them access to our markets and guaranteed military protection so that they wouldn't have to worry about pirates or other countries trying to interdict their trade lines, and they helped us fight the Cold War. Well, the Cold War ended in 1991, and the foreign policy didn't change, and there's a problem with that if you're an American. The problem is that Americans don't like being involved militarily in other countries. We don't mind fighting people, but we don't like occupying people. We don't like the feeling of being an empire. So there's a basic conflict between the way we've been behaving and the way that we like to do things. We're basically a parochial society. We're on the other side of the world from everybody else. The stuff that happens over there shouldn't affect us. That's the way the American character has always been. And that started manifesting itself in the 90s. And if you've noticed, you can really easily predict the outcome of presidential elections right now because it's the domestic candidate, the one with no foreign policy, who says we need to concentrate on our problems at home, that has won every presidential election since then. The open world that we've all grown up with is in the process of either coming to an end or of radically reshuffling, because the essential ground conditions, the threat of nuclear war with the Soviet Union, are no longer true. And when the structure that underlies an economic system changes, the economic system and the political system around it changes. Our entire business is based on that. The underlying economic structure of publishing changed, and we all have careers that we wouldn't have had in the 90s or the 80s or the 70s or the 60s as a result. The same thing is happening to politics and trade around the globe, and it's all happening at once, both because of the collapse of the Bretton Woods system. Bretton Woods was the resort in New Hampshire where this deal was made, and because of the demographic transition. Basically, in the post-war era, everybody around the world had a lot of babies. Biggest single jump in world population ever, both in terms of percentage and in terms of numbers, happened right in the post-war era. It's called the baby boom for a reason. And then, in the middle of the baby boom era, we get the birth control pill, and also there are so many baby boomers that they saturated the labor market, so it became more and more expensive to have children, because the more workers you have, the lower your wages go. Supply outstrips demand. So the baby boomers, because they had the option around the world and because it was expensive to have kids because they were all living in the suburbs and the cities instead of in the country and the farms, where kids are an asset instead of a liability, had way fewer kids than they were, or they delayed childbearing a lot and didn't have their kids till much later in life. So my generation, the Xers, is the smallest in history, worldwide, smallest by percentage of population in world history, as far as we can tell. And that trend around the world continues. Every country, with the exception of five or six, has no large generation after the baby boomers, which is a problem when your entire social welfare system is based upon the idea that there will be more young workers than old workers. Social Security and every equivalent system around the world is based on that. The reason for the migrant crisis in Europe is because Europe doesn't have enough 20-year-olds to insure the pensions of their old people, so they can't keep their economies going. They need the workers. Canada is doing much the same thing. They're trying to solve their demographic transition with massive importation of people from overseas. Might work. The U.S. is the only country in the world that has a millennial and a Gen Z of substantial size. Now, this means a few things. First of all, when the boomers retire, all that investment money that's kept interest rates so low gets pulled out and put into cash and low-risk investments. The investments of the working generation are what fuel the credit markets. That means the availability of capital is going down right now, which is why interest rates are going up. And based on demographic trends, they should go up to historic levels, which means a 30-year mortgage should cost, and will again, 14 to 18% annually. That's what's leveling out the housing market. We're now up at 6%, and it's going to go higher. That's happening around the world. And around the world, there isn't the demand to boost economic productivity from the younger workers because there aren't any younger workers compared to the size of the older generations. In the U.S., there is that, so we may have a little bit of a recession, but we'll do okay in terms of the long-term outlook because we've got a very large follow-up generation in the millennials and we've got massive immigrant inflows. But when you take U.S. security out of the equation and you take economic growth out of the equation, both of which are ramping down severely around the world if they haven't already turned negative, the two main forces that have enabled globalization, which enables our access to markets, which enables the spread of generally Western liberal culture across the world, those fundamentals all go away, and you will see and are seeing massive efforts to relocalize, to reclaim ancestral culture and that sort of thing, because the ancestral cultures are developed in and adapted for a world where there isn't a superpower that is guaranteeing everybody's safety and everybody's economic security. So that's what's going on. And because of that, the markets are going to contract. Some of the trade markets are already contracting, but they're going to contract because demand is going to go down because there aren't as many people. They're going to contract because demand is going to go down because more of the fewer people that are there that might want to read books aren't going to want to read books from Westerners. And the demand is going to go down because more of the fewer people that are there that want to read books that may or may not want to read books from Westerners are going to be engaged in wars or dealing with censorious localist governments that are severely cutting off Western access to their culture in an attempt to revive it, protect it, or shore up government authority like you're seeing happen right now in China. All of those things together mean that we should expect a dramatic contraction of the ebook and audiobook market because we are in the culture business, and the culture business is currently and will be for the next several years the target of major international controversy, disputes, and disapprobation because everybody is trying to figure out how the world works now that all the old rules are gone. That's why you see the international chaos. Nobody knows how it's going to shake out. Going by history as a judge, once it shakes out, we should see growth again. Because once everybody knows the rules, people are much more comfortable dealing with each other. And things go back to the way that we're used to, which is because everybody knows the rules, everybody can behave in a way they know won't provoke a war, everybody can get back to the normal everyday business of living, and part of the normal everyday business of living is buying and reading books and exploring other cultures for entertainment. So, that's why. And it's going to be bumpy. It's already bumpy. If you felt like everybody around you is going crazy but you, trust me, you're probably going crazy too because the whole world right now is going a little bit crazy. This happens reliably every 100 years, more or less, and it's driven by changes in what technology does to geography and economy. And we're just at that point. The last time this happened was in the lead up to World War I. World War I didn't happen in a vacuum. And the time it happened before that was in the lead up to the Napoleonic Wars. Things can get messy. But things also do have a way of working out over the long term. Thanks very much for the question, and I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2018 by J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2018 Artistic Whispers Productions. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.